UFP, the United Federation of Podcasts.
Welcome to Franchise Fatigue, the little podcast on the United Federation of Podcast Network. We, your hosts, go through movies, remakes, and sequels. I'm your host, Brandon Shea Mutella, and joining me, as always, is my ever-constant co-host who's trying desperately to get to third base with me, Zach Moore.
It's good, Brandon. Good job. That's a good baseball euphemism you just used. I'm impressed.
Excellent. I know a little bit about baseball. You know, I used to play baseball when I was a kid.
Oh, really? I did not know this.
I was shortstop, and I liked it, and I played it for a couple years, and I just stopped, kind of.
You were shortstop?
I was.
That's ridiculous. You're
so
like
tall.
Almost 7 feet tall.
Yeah. Is that a bad position for a tall person, shortstop?
That's a terrible. You should have been out of, like, the catcher or, like, a left fielder or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Or first baseman.
Yes. It's a fun game, so. You know what, Zach?
What?
We should have got a guest for this episode. I think we should talk about this with somebody else. What do you think? Why don't you call your buddy Lance? Why don't you call Lance in?
Let me call Lance.
Okay.
And now pinch hitting. Lance Lester. And the crowd goes wild, and I take one over the center field wall. What's up, y'all?
So they have a pinch hitter is somebody who hits for somebody who's, like, hurt or whatever. Is that a pinch hitter?
Any situation.
Any situation.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, I can't run, so could I be a pinch hitter for somebody and they could run for me? Because I'm pretty fat.
That's called a pinch runner.
Yeah.
Like if you.
Oh, that's the thing, too.
If you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can pitch anything in baseball. but if they had a pinch hitter is for someone you didn't want to bat, and then they get a hit, and then if they get on base and you want somebody faster, you a pinch runner.
Yeah.
Okay. Like Willie Mays Hayes would be a great pinch runner.
Yes.
Okay, sounds good. Excellent. So I don't know a lot about baseball. I know that you guys love baseball. I know that Mike Schindler loves baseball. And I just found out that there is an insane amount of baseball games every year.
So 162, Brad.
Yep.
Yes, okay. So this is going to be fun. We are starting ourselves a whole new franchise. This one's the Major League franchise. And going into this, I'm going to tell you guys flat out, I'm not big on comedies, and I'm not big on sports.
Okay. Noted.
So, but we'll see how this movie goes. I will tell you one thing, though, Lance, right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I feel okay saying this because Wesley Snipes is in this. I like this more than I like Blade.
He's the connective tissue.
He is. As far as my appearances on this podcast, yes, that is true.
Hey, you're on a Terminator.
That is true.
Although Wesley Snipes was an awesome Terminator.
Hell yeah.
Terminator 3, Wesley Snipes versus Arnold Schwarzenegger would have been so much better.
Yeah.
But, you know, Brandon, we can't just do these horror franchises and sci-fi franchises. We got to mix it up sometimes. You know, get your Ocean's 11 here, your Major League's there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, excellent. You know what? I'm actually kind of looking forward to this one here. We got a couple ones coming this year. We got Jurassic Park coming. We got Men in Black coming. I think this is going to be a fun year on Franchise Fatigue. While the majority of elaborately complex franchises are horror or science fiction related, there are definitely other ones out there. So, excellent, right on. So, you know what, guys? I know that I've seen a few of the jokes in this. I must have seen the trailer, but this is a first-time watch for me because I don't remember this movie. The things that I remember were Charlie Sheen hitting the guy, the dummy's head off.
Right.
And then talking about ripping the clothes off the thing when they won the games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Piece by piece. So I must have seen a trailer. So that must be the extent of my previous knowledge coming into this.
Every time we win, we peel a section.
Yes. So, Lance, why don't you tell us a bit about your history with this franchise in particular?
Okay. Well, I guess right off the bat, I love this movie and have loved it for pretty much all my life. Mm-hmm. I watched this movie with my dad when I was more than likely way too young to have watched this. But... you know, as a result, like, I probably loved it even more because this was, like, you know, as you know, raunchy and explicit as it is. Mm-hmm. This is probably the movie where, like, I learned to curse because of this movie. and the way they use certain words and how they used it, like, that's how I did it. And, like, there's a lot of jokes in here and there's a lot of quotes of this movie that I say all of the time, and like just kind of incorporate into everyday speech.
Mm-hmm. Mostly with me.
Yeah, mostly because you're the only other person I know who would understand it. But yeah, I love this movie. It's my favorite baseball movie. Every time one of those lists come out, like whether on Twitter or wherever you see it, where people ask like, "What's your favorite baseball movie?" This is always number one. Mm-hmm. I think it's the best of them. It combines, you know, it's a combination of both being a fantastic comedic movie in addition to a good baseball movie, and it does the whole rags to riches formula mm-hmm. that is present in lots of sports movies. I think the best.
Okay. So, like, as far as baseball movies, is there a lot of baseball movies? Because I think...
There are
like,
a lot of baseball movies.
Most of which star Kevin Costner.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. No, there are a lot of baseball movies. And, you know, it could be argued that, like, baseball is, of the different sports, is probably the... Baseball and boxing, you could get them... There's more meat on the bone, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Okay. Do you think that they release 162 baseball movies a year?
No.
No, okay. So, that's fine.
No.
That's not sustainable.
Yeah.
So you say this is your favorite baseball movie. So like, so mm-hmm. the extent I think, like off the top of my head, what I've seen for baseball movies would be, what's the one with Gina Davis?
League of Their Own.
League of Their Own and Field of Dreams are the ones that I know that kind of mine. So like Field okay. of Dreams to me is the classic baseball movie. Like, what do you think of Field of Dreams?
I love Field of Dreams.
Yeah,
it's in my top five.
Okay,
yeah,
mm-hmm. good. Okay.
That's a classic. Yeah.
It is a classic.
That's the best Kevin Costner one, I think.
Yeah, is it okay?
Really? I think Bull Durham is.
Okay.
Bull Durham.
Well, we can both agree that For Love of the Game is the worst of those three.
Yeah, but I still love that movie though.
I think Mike Schindler thinks that's the best one. So shout out to Mike on that.
Shout
one,
out to Mike but... in general.
I know Mike's no, favorite like, one is Moneyball. That's Mike's favorite
yes,
baseball one.
It is, and that's a good one too. Yeah. Let's see. The Sandlot is also a really good one. Mm-hmm. Don't discount it just because it's a movie for kids. I hate when people do that. It's a great movie.
You know what the connective tissue is between Sandlot and Field of Dreams?
Tell us.
James Earl Jones.
Well, and who else?
Oh, I don't know.
The umpire, the guy that played Babe Ruth, is the same guy in the Sandlot, but he is the guy that speaks to Benny the Jet in a dream sequence. Mm-hmm. He's in
Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams as well. He's one of the players he's one of the ghosts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so it's the baseball cinematic universe.
Somewhat. That the guy that I'm talking about, if you look up like there's a famous picture of it's an art print of an umpire and he's like holding his hand out under an umbrella because it's like there's a rain delay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so he like this guy in real life looks like that guy. I think his name is Art LaFleur. But yeah, he looks like a quintessential like baseball guy from like a bygone era.
The Sultan of Swing?
Yeah.
The Babe.
So he's in that movie as well with James Earl Jones.
You know, isn't there more than two Sandlot movies?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
They're direct to video. We're not doing the Sandlot movies.
Not doing those.
On this podcast. James Earl Jones is in at least one of those sequels.
Yeah.
And that
he is.
That makes me sad.
Yes.
Keep getting them checks, James.
Zach, tell me what your history with this franchise.
Well, much like Lance, I think my dad showed it to me at a much too young an age. And then I didn't know there were sequels for a long time. And now I wish I didn't. Like, there's a lot of there's a lot of movies on this podcast we discuss where I'm like, I don't know. They should have just kept it in one. And then we watch enough. I'm like, you know what? There were two or three good ones in this. You know, it was worth keep going. And you know, not to get ahead of ourselves, but I think we'll find that this is going to actually be one where they should have just left it in one, but we'll see.
What have you gotten me into?
Well, you know, and then but for me though, you know, playing baseball in my youth and with friends and all this who know the movie, like it's such a quotable movie.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in situations anything like the ones in the movie, you always say the lines.
Absolutely.
You know, when you're playing, and it's just it's fun. So it's always it more than anything else, it's extremely quotable. And you know, it's funny, you're watching for this. I was like, you know, there's really not that much actual baseball in it. But we'll talk about it as we go. But I've always loved this one. And like Lance, it's probably when people ask me, what's your favorite baseball movie? I say Major League.
Okay. Right on. Excellent. Well, why don't we jump into the trivia for Major League?
Batter up. That's a baseball term, Brandon.
I like Center Field by John Fogerty. That's a good song.
It is a good song.
Right Field is also a great song
right
as well.
I wish there was a song for every position.
I know, right?
It would be totally worth it. But look up Right Field sometime, Brandon. It's a good song. So Major League, written and directed by David S. Ward. He's actually a lifelong Cleveland Indians fan. We'll talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland Indians of it all.
I never heard of that that baseball team. Isn't there another Cleveland name?
We'll talk about that, Brandon. Talk about that. You know what? I hate it when these sports and we just make up teams like this. I wish they would have picked an actual team. But I looked and there's no Cleveland Indians anymore in the baseball.
What's this director's name?
His name is David S. Ward.
Are we going to get the Ward special edition where he like digitally changes the name of the team like George Lucas did?
Perhaps. Now, okay. Fine. He brought it up. Let's talk about it now. Okay. At the start of the 2022 season, which is this year, as of this recording, this season, the Cleveland Indians will officially change their name to the Cleveland Guardians. And the very first shot of this movie is actually of one of those Guardian statues on the Hope Memorial Bridge in Cleveland. So I'm like, oh,
yeah,
I actually accept this name more now because it's Major League.
Yeah.
Right? But okay, let's talk about this now and then we can get into the fun stuff, right? Okay. Cleveland Indians. Kind of a problematic name. Definitely a problematic logo. Would you agree, Lance?
Yes. The logo is the worst part about the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Because this is not, I mean, there are sports teams named after Native American tribes,
Blackhawks,
like the Blackhawks.
We have in Canada
the Seminoles,
Edmonton Eskimos.
Yeah,
they've changed their names. I don't know what, because I don't like sports. So I don't remember what they've changed to. But
right.
Okay, so there are sports teams that have Native tribes as their mascot, mm-hmm. right? But the Indians, what was problematic about them, number one, is like it's just like Indians, right? Like there wasn't anything specific. There wasn't anything to designate which tribe they were trying to talk about, because with at least the other teams that have a tribe as their mascot, they honor those people, or at least try their best to, and try to be respectful of them. For example, Florida State University, their mascot is the Seminoles, as in for the Seminole tribe, and there are scholarships available for members of that tribe to go to that university. They have an actual person of the Seminole tribe to be the mascot. Like it's not just like, you know, it's not just like some white guy putting on paint and stuff and going out there and acting like one. They have actual, you know, people to represent that culture and teach that culture. Mm-hmm. With this, it was just like, oh, Indians, as just like a catch-all term. And then the worst part is the mascot, which showcases the stereotype and the awful caricatures that were often done, mm-hmm. especially in the early days of cartoons that depicted those people. That was the worst part about it. And it lasted for a very, very long time.
Yeah, I'm sure I saw this mascot in a Bugs Bunny cartoon once.
Either that, or it was just, you know, that's how they, it wasn't the mascot. It was just, that's if Bugs was dealing with, you know, Native Americans, mm-hmm. that's the caricature type that they used for the cartoons.
Mm-hmm. So they've since changed to the Cleveland Guardians, mm-hmm. Which if you look at the logo, it looks like the 1990s Anaheim Angels logo.
It does.
And, you know, I just felt like, okay, the whole Cleveland Guardians, like being the statues on the Hope Memorial Bridge, like, okay, I follow that reasoning. But when I first heard it, I was like, That's like such a lazy name. Like you just cut off the first two letters and switched them out with something else. Like Indians, Guardians. It's like it felt like if you have a store and you need to change your name, but you don't want to buy too many new letters. So you're just like, let's take off the first three letters and put something else on. Because it's kind of the same font and everything.
Yeah.
But so anyway, all that to say, like there's a whole, and I encourage everyone to go look it up and do your research on the history of the Indians and stuff, but it is a huge thing, and now this franchise, which is about the Cleveland Indians, mm-hmm. kind of has that, whoa, what was this team? So it's this inescapable, you know, thing to discuss when you talk about Cleveland Indians.
It's true, and like you and I have discussed, like off mic, we were joking about like, yeah, people are going to watch Major League now and think that this was a made up team name,
right?
moving forward.
So what's like the Browns?
Major League
then?
3, back to the minors.
What's the Browns?
Oh, the Browns.
Because that was showed up in this, the Cleveland Browns. Where they like the guy went to the stadium and said Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, that's their football team.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Their mascot is a dog.
Okay. That shows what I know. I'm like, I assumed that was like the minor league team.
No, the Cleveland Browns are the NFL football team for Cleveland.
Okay. Okay.
But those Cleveland Browns became the Baltimore Ravens, didn't they?
Yes. And then, yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah. The original Colts? Ones. No, so the Baltimore Colts became Indianapolis, and then the Cleveland Indians, as of this,
the Browns.
They became the Baltimore Ravens, and then Cleveland just became a new team.
Right, the Cleveland Browns became the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Anyway, sports, right? Right, sports is a complicated Star Trek. You really get into it, Brandon. What's canon, what's not, what's
it's
mythology.
True.
So anyway, so there you go, right? The Indians are now the Guardians. It has been addressed.
Yes.
Let's move on. So, but David S. Ward, who wrote and directed the film, he created this movie because he thought it'd be the only way he'd ever see the Indians win anything. Because it had been, 40 years, plus.
At that point in time,
yeah. And they were,
it had been 40 years since they won the World Series.
And they...
they last won it in, 48?
And they still haven't won.
Yeah, that's correct.
To this day. This is still aquable.
To this day.
Oh, so this, really is, close this is a couple not a documentary. Times.
No.
No.
Oh, man. Now, so Charlie Sheen, Wild Thing, Vaughn, right? He was actually a high school pitcher, and he was offered a baseball scholarship to the University of Kansas. In the movie, he throws a 101-mile-hour fastball, but in real life, Charlie Sheen can only throw in the high 80s. Now, that made it easier to make it look like he was throwing that fast, but he did admit to Sports Illustrated in an interview that he took steroids to prepare for this role, and he thinks that's why he was able to throw so fast. So.
I mean, knowing what we do about Charlie Sheen,
he took a lot of things.
It does not surprise me that he took things.
Right. Oh, man. Now, real-life relief pitcher Mitch Williams, who was on the Chicago Cubs at the time when the film came out, he was inspired by Rick Wild Thing Vaughn. He began to wear the number 99 and had Wild Thing play when he entered games, and he shortly thereafter got the nickname Wild Thing. And this kind of started this trend that you still see today when relief pitchers come in, mainly closers who pitch like the last inning or two of a game. They have these intro songs,
mm-hmm.
and they have the gates open up, and like, it's a thing now, and it really got started with this film. Like, we had a famous closer, Billy Wagner,
yep.
who was on the Astros in the 90s and early 2000s in our childhood,
uh-huh.
and he always came into Inner Sandman
yep.
by Metallica, and that was always his thing, so that was a big deal.
Did they call him the Sandman?
No.
they called him Billy the Kid, actually,
yeah.
because of the Wild West and all that stuff. But that would have been a cool one.
That would have been cool.
I want to have a nickname in sports, like the Sandman.
Sandman. Zach Sandman Moore.
There it is. So the Indians made the World Series as recently as 2016.
Yes.
And fans wanted Charlie Sheen to appear as Wild Thing to throw out the ceremonial first pitch, but... Sheen said he would have done it, but Major League Baseball and the Indians had already decided on other people to throw out the first pitches. I think that was intentional. I thought, look, Charlie Sheen's kind of a problem. Talk about problematic. He's kind of a problematic guy. They're probably like, you know what, Charlie, we're good.
Look,
thank you.
Baseball is constantly looking for a win and to make themselves seem like they're, like they're cool with the fans and like they're with the times. They should have totally canceled somebody from doing that to have Charlie Sheen come out there. They should have taken a risk and been like, you know what, Charlie, you can throw out a first pitch.
Sorry, Buzz Aldrin. We have Charlie yeah. Sheen. I don't know who it was, but somebody historic like that. Now, Willie Mays Hayes, of course, mm-hmm. played by Blade himself, Wesley Snipes. When he says he can hit like Mays, he's talking about Willie Mays, the Say Hey Kid. Mm-hmm. When he shows up, he says Say Hey to everybody.
Say hey.
Thought that was pretty funny.
Say hey.
That's the reason he says that, because he's volleying himself after
okay,
Willie
so,
Mays.
Okay, so Willie Mays
How
is a
doing?
Real person, because I thought I recognized that name.
Okay,
yes.
Well, Willie Mays is a real person.
Yes,
okay.
Willie Mays is one of the greatest players in baseball history.
Right, okay. He played for over 20 years, and he's a New York and San Francisco Giants great. And also, he played with the New York Mets.
Okay.
So he's one of the top... five home run hitters of all time. Mm-hmm. Barry Bonds is godfather.
Yeah.
So he's a baseball legend, like a legend.
That is who Worf is in Far Beyond the Stars.
he's basically Willie Mays.
Okay. Yeah. That's who he's playing.
now when he says he hits like Mays, and he says he runs like Hayes. And that is referring to Bullet Bob Hayes, who won gold in the 100 meter dash in the 1964 Olympics. And then he went on to a Hall of Fame NFL career.
With the Cowboys.
Dallas Cowboys is the fastest man to ever play football. So I didn't actually know that. I was like,
yep.
who's this Hayes guy? Is this Charlie Hayes? That's third baseman for the Astros right here. But that's who Willie Mays Hayes is a combination of. Now, and one of the most epic recastings ever in motion picture history. This is the only movie where Wesley Snipes plays Willie Mays Hayes. he gets recast with Omar Epps,
mm-hmm.
which I mentioned in Scream 2, our conversation ran it, and Major League 2. So this is the only time we see him. And you know, maybe part of the reason for that is he was not a very skilled baseball player in real life because he never played it much before. And director David S. Ward said that Snipes was so awful that they didn't have any scenes of him throwing the ball because he was terrible at throwing a baseball.
Mm-hmm. So. I heard about that while listening to the Rewatchables podcast when they talked about Major League, and they were like, yeah, Snipes was terrible at throwing a baseball, so they cut out all the scenes of him actually doing it, like, because he couldn't do it.
Well, he probably also didn't come back for the second one because he was busy with Two Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
Oh, man. So, Harry Doyle, right? Played by Bob Uecker. Bob Uecker was chosen by David S. Ward because of his work in the Miller Lite ads and the sitcom Mr. Belvedere, which is in the 80s.
Yep.
And it wasn't until Ward met Bob Uecker that he learned that Bob Uecker had been the radio broadcaster for the Milwaukee Brewers for 20 years. It's like, it's just amazing. It's like, you picked the baseball. I thought that's where they started with that. Like, let's get that guy.
Yeah.
Not the case.
Just a bit outside.
Yeah, just a bit outside, right? That's
ball four.
He improvised a bunch of those lines because he's, you know, as a radio broadcaster, you got to be quick with your wit and all that stuff. And David S. Ward encouraged him to improvise a lot of these lines. One hit.
He was one of the best parts of the film, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And he's the one constant across all the films. Well, I guess Corbin Burnson is too.
Yeah.
Q2. Hey, so did you recognize him, Brandon?
I did. You know who else I recognize in this? President David Palmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hats for Beth.
I looked him up. He's in for all three.
Keith Hats. Oh, he is in the third. Oh, my God. He's in the third one. Oh, man. Dennis Haysbert doing the Lord's work, being in all three of these movies. So many of the baseball scenes were filmed at High Corbett Field in Tucson, Arizona, for all the spring training stuff. That's before they start the season. Because baseball players, before the season, they have spring training. They're either in Arizona or Florida.
does Cleveland, are they part of the Arizona League?
I don't know. That's a good question. That could have been either in this movie.
Okay.
But a lot of the members of the team, like the extra people that they're just around filling up the field, they were members of the University of Arizona baseball team. So that's how they filled out their rosters there. All of the home game scenes were filled at Milwaukee's County Stadium, which has since been torn down. But the interesting connection there, again, Bob Uecker was the announcer for the Milwaukee Brewers at the time. And, of course, all the exterior shots were Cleveland's Municipal Stadium, which has now also been torn down. And they've been replaced by new stadiums, which names always change due to whoever owns the rights. So I'm not really sure.
It was
Miller Park and Jacobs Field, last I checked.
Yeah, like it was cool when there was Jacobs Field in Cleveland because, like, yeah, we're playing at the Jake, but now it's Progressive Field, I think.
Yeah, which is, you know, the insurance company. Yeah. So I don't know. Is it still Miller Park in
Milwaukee? It is still Miller Park. I mean, Miller has the money.
Yeah, beer company. So the king of beers, Miller. Or is it Budweiser? Budweiser is the king of beers. I don't know. Now, there were a couple of shots where you can actually see it's still the Brewer Stadium. Like, you see a logo for WTMJ, which is the NBC affiliate for Milwaukee. So I think that was pretty funny. And you can also see a Milwaukee's Brewers logo in the outfield somewhere. So now, most of the filming was done in summer of 1988, which is one of the hottest summers on record in Milwaukee. And this is you can tell in the final playoff game where all the players are wearing these long sleeves and jackets because in baseball, the end of the season is in September and October. So we need to look like it was a cool fall night, but all the fans are wearing like shorts and short sleeve t-shirts and stuff. So it's like the actors must have been miserable wearing like turtlenecks and stuff when it's like 90 degrees. That's awful. The opponent, Yankee slugger, right? The guy who would sell the home runs, right? Let's see. Clue Haywood was his name, right? He was kind of based off the New York Yankees famous catcher Thurman Munson. But he was played by...
Really? Thurman Munson?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So he was based off him.
Okay.
But he was played by a former pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers, Peter Vukovich. And that's funny because at the time, the Brewers are in the American League, and pitchers don't hit in the American League. So Vukovich never hit a single home run in his entire 11-year Major League career. And he only played 8 years where he made... he made no plate appearances for 8 of his 11 seasons in the big leagues, and yet they pick him to be the big home run hitter on the other team. So I thought that was pretty funny. And also, you know, there are a couple players on the Yankees here that were in clear violation of the Yankees dress code policy.
That's true.
Clue Haywood is one of them. He has this facial hair The Yankees did not allow facial hair.
They do not allow.
They do it, and they still don't. That's like the Steinbrenners who own the Yankees. That's, they have a very strict, like, you have to shave and cut your hair. Mm-hmm. And then the Duke, when the closer who comes in with the Yankees, he has kind of longer hair.
Yeah.
And that's not allowed by the Yankees either. So this movie is inaccurate.
It is.
Why would they have a problem with facial hair?
That is, it's the owner's choice. It's one of his rules for the team.
Okay.
Facial hair is what?
I mean, if we want to go there, I mean, like it was a way to keep things like clean cut, and we don't want any troublemakers on the team or any of that type of stuff.
Tattoos and earrings as well.
Yeah. So you could read into that what you want, but that's part of it. It's like preserving a certain image.
Yeah. And it slows you down when you run too, right? You know all that.
Aerodynamics. There it is. Now, in the final game, the Indians play the Yankees in this game. There's a shortstop on the Yankees, and he's number two.
Yep.
And this is before Derek Jeter played for the Yankees. So a few years later, Derek Jeter was number two for the Yankees.
Number two.
For what, 20 years?
Derek Jeter.
Like almost, what, more number than two. That maybe?
Yeah, 20 years.
And... And he's a Hall of Fame. He's like one of the best baseball players of all time, and he's number two. So this movie's inaccurate, but it did also predict the future at the same time. So good on you. Now there was a extended ending to the film, which featured the marriage between Jake Taylor and Lynn Wells, Tom Berenger and Rene Russo. Mm-hmm. They shot it, and it was supposed to happen after the Indians' victory over the Yankees, but they deleted it because the producers felt the wedding scene would put the focus on them and that relationship, and not the team. And I definitely think that was the right decision. What about you?
I agree. Absolutely. I will talk about that plot element when we get into our discussion of the film. So,
okay. Now, this is the only film in the series to be distributed by Paramount Pictures. Warner Brothers released the two sequels. It's also the only film to be rated R. Major League 2 was rated PG. And Major League Back to the Minors was rated PG-13. So to go from... I would defy anyone to find a trilogy with those three ratings in that order. R, PG, and then PG-13.
I'm looking up Terminator right now here.
There's so funny.
Brandon, there's no PG Terminator. It's just I would wager there's no franchise which has an R and a PG in it. That's just an insane, and that goes into what we'll talk about in the next episode with Major League 2. Now, a couple final things about the film. During the 2016 season, the real Cleveland Indians, the players Jason Kipnis and Mike Napoli, they acquired two Jobu statues and set them up in a shrine in the team's locker room at Progressive Field. You're right, Lance. That was the new name of the stadium. They initially placed an offering of vodka, but then switched it to rum, resulting in a 6-0 victory over the Tampa Bay Rays in June of that year. And in July, they sacrificed a supermarket chicken to help in teammate Yan Gomez's slump.
Gomez, wow.
The legacy of this movie continues to this day. And then finally, right, the whole plot of the owner, Rachel Phelps, right, her goal was to move the Cleveland Indians to Miami, to Florida, because at the time, in the late 80s, Florida did not have a baseball team.
The Palm Beach Polo Country Club.
And here's the deal, right? The Indians, they make it back to the World Series in 1997. Who do they lose to?
The Florida Marlins,
who won the World Series like less than 5 years after being introduced into the Major League Baseball. So that's funny to me that it was like, oh, Florida team. And now they're the Miami Marlins. They're in the same spot. They just rebranded themselves. So there you go. Life imitating art, imitating life, predicting the future of this film. There you have it, Major League.
Okay, excellent. Right on. Great trivia there, Zach. Awesome trivia. However, I do have some questions about the rules of baseball.
I thought you might.
How does it work if you have a previous year's team that she can just come in and like say, I want these people here? Like she just makes a roster of people who weren't on the team.
Well, first of all, that's a great scene because they come in there and she's like, this guy's dead. We'll cross him off the list. So
cross him off then.
How it works is you know, like any other sports team, like players have contracts and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming they just had a whole lot of free agents. Like, I think like there were a handful of the guys, like some of the core players that were like the Roger Dorn, right? Q2, Gordon Brinson, right? Mm-hmm. He had been on the team for a while. Mm-hmm. Seems like the old pitcher guy.
Harris.
Yeah, he had been on the team for a while, but most of everybody else was a rookie or a wash up, you know, because you have 25 people on your roster. You got to fill it up. I'm assuming like 20 of these 25 people are all these just journeyman, yeah, never wears that she tries to sign and make the team horrible.
Yes. So. Mm-hmm. Cool. Pretty much, it's the opposite of Moneyball in that regard.
Okay. Yeah. Because that's the, for, you know, that's the plot, right? The whole driving force is like, she, like, her husband died. She took over the team. She doesn't want to live in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. So if the team is bad enough and the attendance drops under a certain record, or attendance, I should say, if the team drops under a certain attendance at their stadium, they're free to go move somewhere, and she wants to go to Miami. Mm-hmm. So, and that sets all everything off, and the entire chain of events that happens in the movie is because of that.
Okay, so they don't have, like, do they have drafts in baseball? Like, they do,
they do have drafts, but those people in the minor leagues, though.
Okay.
I figured most of this would be us explaining baseball to them.
Yeah, I don't know all this stuff on baseball here, so.
Okay. But no, that's true. Like they, if you want to save money, you can just sign, like, you know, players that, that don't cost a lot of money and aren't very good, and you can tank, I guess.
So. You can.
Okay, because I guess, like, my problem with sports films is that I don't understand the sport all that well. And so there's these things that people who are fans of the sport will generally understand. Like, for example, we were planning on talking about the Rocky movies, and, like, the first time I watched Rocky, and they, like, I didn't know what going the distance meant, so when the end of the movie happened, I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Wait, you didn't pick that up in context?
No, I didn't. I don't know if I missed something. I'm like, I didn't know what that meant. So, like, for him to be so happy at the end, I'm like, I don't even know what just happened. So here, I'm like, a lot of the stuff that's going on in the baseball, I'm like, I don't quite know what's going to happen. Because as far as I know, you just have a team. So this is interesting that you can just kind of pick and choose who you want on your team from people that you have as under contract. That's interesting. Okay.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, like in sports, it's not like, you know, how the organizations run. They run just like any other business does, right? And so, you know, you can move employees. Like, if you're the owner and you're the person at the top, you can move employees however you see fit within your legal bounds. So in here, Rachel Phelps is just, you know, nefarious about it. she has an agenda for why she's making her team intentionally bad.
Can you do that in, like, hockey and football?
Make your team bad and tank? Yes, absolutely.
But there are certain salary caps in place now that kind of, like, make you force teams to be competitive.
Yes.
Like, because this is you know, that happened after this movie. So maybe this movie was like, oh, no, we can't let this act. Someone might get this idea. We have to change it. But, oh, man. But you know, Brandon, let's talk about some of the characters. I mean, what were some of your favorite players or characters?
Okay, so jumping right off the bat, my favorite character in this film was actually the coach of the team. Okay, so, like,
oh, yeah.
Okay, and the reason why I liked him is because I liked this movie, and I liked the idea, and I liked the concept of somebody saying, I want to purposely tank this team. I want to move. I'm going to tank the team. I found a loophole. Let's suck and get out of here. And so, like, this coach has been put in a position where he's been given, like, the worst of the worst. And he's got
to make dire world.
But he doesn't take it out on the team. You know, he does the best that he can. He's motivating these guys. He's doing the best he can to work with them and try and build the best that he can from all this crud that he's been given. And so I just really appreciated that character. I don't know. I just thought he was a really great character in the film.
Lou Brown was the best fictional manager in any baseball
game. Yes, and even absolutely.
Just his whole demeanor is like, uh-huh. Like, he never... His tone never changes. He's just always like this.
He's
all the time.
Like, before, like, we got to, like, you know, quote unquote, know him, right? Mm-hmm. Like before I, like, read any of his books or, like, heard him in interviews and stuff like that, or, like, really got to hear him talk about things. That's kind of who I imagined Phil Jackson was like, but
this is the coach of the Lakers, basketball.
But he's not like that at all. Right. So, but I figured he had that same vibe. But no, like, he's definitely the best, like, you know, baseball manager.
Don't give me any of that ole.
Yeah.
Right. Just the way he talks. Like, his most power move, I think. Well, he has two huge power moves. One is, like, you know, Corbin Burns comes out with his contract. Yeah. He's like, look at this. I says I don't have to do this. And he just unzips his pants and pees on the contract. Zipped up his pants and walks off. And then when the
doesn't
owner.
Doesn't say a word.
Doesn't say anything. Then the owner comes in and everybody scrambles around in the locker room. And he's just standing there naked.
Yep.
Right. It's like, don't you think you should cover yourself up? He's like, I'm too old to go looking for the lockers and we're out of towels. So he just stands
and there's no
there
hot
naked.
Water in the shower.
He does get mad sometimes, but it just, I don't know, like, it's a classic baseball manager sounding guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, I love him as well. He's an underrated supporting character because you got all these big stars and other names and very colorful characters taking up a lot of attention.
They weren't stars, though. They weren't stars yet. Mm. That's the other thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Sheen and Snipes weren't stars yet,
which is
kind of crazy.
Young Wesley Snipes, young when he had, like, range and comedic
timing.
Yeah.
I actually liked the idea of this woman who was owning the team and trying to tank them on purpose. I thought that was a very interesting motivation for a character, right? To come in and be, I don't want to be here. I want to try and take advantage of the situation and move out of here. So I thought she was a good antagonist for the film. The one thing that didn't work for me is that, like, by the end of it, like, she's clearly not going to win what she wants to because they're doing too well. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So for her to still be mad and
rooting against the team
and the general manager, whoever was sitting up next to her.
Yeah. Oh, did you recognize the general manager?
No.
That he's the sheriff from Halloween. Charles Cyphers.
The first Halloween?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't recognize him, no.
Yeah. He's a little older, a little heavier, and a little less hair. Yeah. But I wouldn't recognize him either if I didn't see the credits, but anyway.
Like Annie Brackett's dad?
Yes, Annie Brackett's dad, Sheriff Brackett.
Oh, okay. And he's in Halloween Kills, too.
Evil dies tonight Evil from dies Halloween tonight. Kills. Okay. Who's that guy?
So, yeah, so, like, by the end, especially even in the last game that they're playing there, which, so, what happened at the end? What is that last game that they played? Did they win something?
They won their division, is what happens. So, back in the 80s, that meant that they were going to the ALCS, which is the round right before going to the World Series. And you find out what happens to them at the beginning of Major League 2.
Okay.
Which is another reason not to like Major League 2, but we won't get there right now. But, it's Brandon, it's like taking me out to the Hall Suite. They celebrate because they got a hit.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
So these guys celebrate because they made the playoffs. That's, to them, that's top of the world.
It was a huge accomplishment. And Rachel Phelps, the reason why she was still mad at the end, because she's just an entitled rich person. Like, she's still the owner of the team. She still has, like, way more money than she could ever, you know, actually have any need for. Mm-hmm. She just didn't get her way. She was just, you know, petulant. She's a child. So that's why she's still mad.
I'm okay with them being happy for making it to the finals. I just wanted to clarify that's what happened, because they said so many times that the team isn't, they haven't been to the finals in however many years. They haven't done well in however many years. They haven't won a pennant.
So there's the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
There's the championship series, and then there's the World Series.
Yeah.
What they did was they won their division, which let them get into the championship series, where they would play a team from the other who won the other division,
the West in this case.
Mm-hmm. And then whoever won that would go to the World Series. So,
how many divisions are there?
Well, in the 80s, there were two divisions.
Yes.
Okay.
There was the AL West and the AL East. And then there was the NL West and the NL East.
Yeah.
So technically, there were four and two leagues.
So it's like the semifinals.
Yes.
Yes.
Semifinals. Okay. Sounds good. So, I think the other character that I liked was Corbin Burnson's character, because it was interesting to see this ball player who was like, who had this ego, and he's like, I don't want to slide. I don't want to run. I don't want to do this. I don't want to risk injuring my face, because he obviously, when he was done, he wanted to go on to other things.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And no, I think that showed they had a very good like swath of like what characters are in a locker room.
Yes,
because there are guys like that. They're old journeyman guys like Jake Taylor, the catcher.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great scene when he's like, "If you ever do that again,
mm-hmm.
like, shove your nuts down your throat.
Shove it down your throat."
Oh man, but I think they're all, you know, colorful characters that play off each other well. I mean, Serrano, right?
Yep.
Dennis Haysbert was fantastic. I think God, he's one of the most quotable ones. Like, somebody else picked up this guy.
Yep.
Like, all right, that's enough fastballs.
Throw some breaking balls.
Did you get what that was, Brandon?
No.
Like, okay, so he's really good at hitting fastballs, Serrano.
Yeah, so fastball, they come in straight, and you could, like, see it, there's no
movement to the ball.
Yeah, the ball comes in straight to its location.
Okay. If you're fast enough to get your hands around for the bat to hit the ball, you're going to hit a home run.
Yeah, which is what he was doing earlier.
But that's only one of many pitches in baseball. There's change-ups and sliders and curveballs. They're like, all right, let's throw them curveballs.
So when they said breaking balls, so, like, pitches that have a break to them, meaning that as they cross the plate, they're either diving down, they're diving to the right, diving to the left.
Mm-hmm.
And he's terrible at
and
that.
He couldn't hit those.
Okay. I probably couldn't hit those either.
Yeah, neither could Michael Jordan, who played baseball for 2 years, by the way. But that's its own story.
They basically did the same thing to Michael Jordan.
They're all so colorful, but I Serrano's probably my favorite.
For bats.
Hats for bats. Keep hats warm. It's just so dumb.
I don't know. See, out of that exchange, probably one of my favorite lines in all of movies, and of all of the movies that I've seen, comes from this movie. And that was, you know, his interactions with Harris. Because in all these sports movies, there's always a very conservative Christian guy, like, in the group. And so he's sitting there talking to Serrano, and then he's just like, are you trying to tell me that Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball? I think that's such a funny line.
He's like, ah, Jesus, I like him very much.
But he's no help with curveball. And his response to it was like, he's so flabbergasted. He's like, are you trying to tell me Jesus Christ couldn't hit a curveball? It's so funny on so many levels. It's such a funny thing to say. I love that quote so much.
Up your butt, Joe Boo. Man.
Okay, so.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, okay, so I'm not much for comedies. I don't watch a lot of comedies. I don't laugh a lot.
You should.
So I didn't laugh a lot during this movie.
It'll do you some good, Brandon. I trust. I promise you.
We watched UHF, and I did laugh my ass off at UHF the other night.
There we go. So, that's a classic.
So
who wants to drink from the fire hose?
Exactly. My favorite part of that is when the guy cuts his thumb off, but, you know.
So. You are a fan.
Yes, because that's hilarious.
So what were you entertained? You were laughing.
Okay, so I enjoyed the back half of this film much more than I enjoyed the front half of this film.
Okay.
The front half of this film, when they were just bad, I'm like, I wasn't really appreciating it. But when they actually started to do good and turn the team around, I really started to enjoy the film. And I got more invested with the characters as they were doing better. And I'm not going to lie, man. Like, I know that it's kind of hokey and cheesy, but I love the moment when Charlie Sheen came out and they were playing the Wild Thing song at the end. I'm like,
yeah.
It totally got me. Yes, they did.
Of course.
Okay, so
that stuff is awesome.
Thing.
Yeah.
Down, down, down.
Because it makes me wish I liked sports because, you know, and then like when they're watching the sport, they're watching the final game there and everybody's cheering and having a good time when they win and whatnot. I could feel it. Like, as a viewer, I can feel the love and the joy that these people are having for this. And so my appreciation for the film went up significantly in the back half of this film.
Oh, okay. You mentioned all the people watching the sports and stuff. So a little bit of trivia here. Neil Flynn,
who
plays the janitor on Scrubs, he is in one of those bar scenes in a couple of shots, and this is his first on-screen appearance.
Yeah, he's also like he's doing at the very beginning. He's like, these guys stink. When they're reading off the roster of the list of names.
Yeah, who are these guys?
He's like Willie Hayes. He's like, who are these guys?
So I thought that was cool because he's a big character actor, and hey, he was on Smallville on a couple episodes.
He sure
just
was.
So you guys know, but okay, I see your point, Ben. I don't know. I almost enjoy the thing. Is like there's little parts in here that are just so quotable and fun, like moments. You know, like you may run like maze, but you hit like beep.
Yeah.
Like this. So, those are great lines, little moments.
Such a coach
they're sprinkled thing
to say
in throughout.
Too.
But like I mentioned earlier, like, you know
great,
what?
Great catch there, Hayes. Don't ever do it again.
Yeah. Okay, but, so why didn't they want him to do that again?
Oh, because that is bad fundamentals.
It's
for
bad
defense.
Fundamentals.
Like, you want to have two hands in the air and catch the ball with both hands. If you just wait for it to kind of fall in your chest like that,
basket catches. Drop it.
Yeah, okay. You shouldn't do that unless you absolutely have to. Those are horrible fundamentals.
Yeah.
Okay.
What was I saying?
Sorry.
You completely threw me off about
good.
Your questions about the rules of baseball.
Sorry.
That's what I'm about. So, I enjoy all those little parts about the baseball stuff, but then I realized, like, you know, how much, I wish I had time, like, how much baseball is actually in this movie? Because I'm like, I say this is my favorite baseball movie about 34% of it is baseball. Everything else is just not on the field and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's okay because like all the best sports movies and stuff, it's really not about the sport. It's about like the team and the community and all the good feelings around.
You mean the human element that's going on?
Yeah, the human element. Much like any story.
Like any story. So again, these things are present in everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you need all that stuff to kind of make it worthwhile because you care about the characters. Like I like all the, I think the, I don't know, like I don't even have a least favorite team member. I think all the ones they feature are fun in their own way. Like Charlie Sheen is like, you know, they make fun of him for being this like punk guy.
Yeah.
You know? And I love like Willie Mays whole thing and Willie Mays Hayes. Mm-hmm. The whole like the scene where him and Jake Taylor and Vaughn all go to the restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all ordered like at the menu. Like these guys have a fun dynamic because they're all so very different.
Yes. Well, also like this is he's wearing that cutoff jacket.
Yeah,
he's like,
Vaughn is wearing
the cutoff
jacket.
I feel like a banker in this. It's so funny.
Because they make him wear a tie.
Right.
But okay, so let's talk about, like, I love all the characters. I think they all have a good angle, and they're all
talk about the
something,
two things
right?
that I didn't like about the film.
Yeah,
for
let's
sure.
talk about, I believe the love story might be one of them.
Okay, yeah, we'll go there first then. So, yeah, so, like, I don't know, I'm tired of this type of storyline in a film where, you know, like the guy comes in and the woman's found somebody else and he's like, I'm just such a charmer. I'm going to charm her and bring her back to me. And because I'm just so awesome. And that's exactly what happens here, right? He charms Renee Russo off of her feet and she leaves the guy that she's about to marry. He hasn't seen her in 14 years, but she just falls for
three
him.
Years.
All
three
years.
Well, three.
I'm sure. 14, three, whatever. Same thing.
There right. is a difference,
so,
but go on.
But anyway, so I don't know. I think that that plot line is a tired old plot line. And I'm like, it could have been cut out of this film, and I don't. It wouldn't have changed my. It would have increased my opinion of this film, I think.
But you need that emotional journey,
no, you
man.
Don't. No, you don't.
Look, man. Like, you know, it seems like it's weird, right? Like, and you think that it's tired and played out. But like, as somebody who's experienced, like, seeing like somebody like, you know, the old boyfriend coming in at the last minute when you're trying to establish something with somebody and they just go right back to it, like that happens all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a very real thing, and it's done
as old as time.
It's done in media all the time in various situations for that reason. Trust me.
Okay.
I do agree. I feel like it could have been fleshed out a little more because it's like, okay, he meets her a couple of times. They have this interaction at the library. That was kind of fun.
Yeah.
She comes to a baseball game. He follows her home in the team car, which is hilarious. The bullpen car. Yeah. Like, just follow her home.
In a little baseball helmet.
And then they hook up, and I'm going to just presume that continued to happen for a while.
Yes.
Because then she just shows up again at the end. She's like, okay, because he goes back there one time and she's moved out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to assume they hooked up more over the course of the, I don't know, right? Because then she just shows up at the last game. And she's like, hey, look, here's my hand. I got no engagement ring. And she's in the last shot of the movie with all the guys at the freeze frame. Like, you didn't earn this, Renee Russo. I like you. But you didn't earn your spot in this freeze frame for the last
look,
shot of the movie.
She was happy that he read comic book version of Moby Dick.
That was hilarious. Like, that was a fun thing with them all reading the comic book versions of these novels.
Yeah.
Crime
yeah.
and Punishment. Yeah. This one for you.
War and Peace.
Yes.
So funny.
Yes, so Zach kind of gets what I'm at. It didn't feel earned, so maybe that's it. Maybe I didn't word it that way. But
hey,
yeah,
man,
it didn't
feel earned in real life either, but what are we going to do?
See, if only they had left in the scene with the wedding, it would have felt like it all came together.
I think I would have been even more upset if they did.
I agree. That was a smart move to cut. Now, what was your other issue, Brandon?
Okay, so like in this day and age especially, as a white dude, I don't know how to take Dennis Haybert's character in this here, right? So looking at this from a 2022 lens, I'm like, this feels wrong. So you guys have already talked that you love the character. I just didn't know how to feel watching this film here.
What about it?
It felt like it was mocking of a stereotype of like some black dude who believes in voodoo and whatnot. I don't know. It just felt odd to me. And I'm still trying to analyze how to look at these types of characters as a white dude in 2020. So
okay.
That's all. Like, I guess, I don't know. But you guys said that you love the characters, so.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that notion. Well, with that, it's just, I think that's just one of the things that his character is just an example of the many types of people that you will see in a locker room. Because, mm-hmm. There are, not everybody has the same background, and especially in these locker rooms where you have a lot of players who are not from the U.S. In this case, Serrano is not from the U.S. He brought his culture into the locker room, and mm-hmm. it just so happened to be this, you know, this voodoo type of culture. So I don't think the intent there was for it to be any sort had any malice towards it. I don't think. I could see how there would be some people might look upon it that way, but I think in this case, I think they would be reaching because I think there are other examples in other movies where it's like, yeah, that's not how it would go down. But I think, like in sports movies, I think they do a better job of it than they do in other movies when they're including these types of things.
Okay. Yeah, and also, I mean, it is a comedy, so everybody's little broad strokes with all the characters. Like I see, even Charlie Sheen is like, you're a parody of a punk guy, right? Or something like that. So I understand what you're saying to you, Brandon, but I think there are levels of it all, and he's not like. I don't know, he's a kind of a charming character. Like, there's something about him that's fun. But okay, that's a valid point. But Jobu, man, Jobu gets his vengeance.
Yeah, so he does. That's the other part of it.
He proves that he's real.
Yeah.
Because he is the guy with a bat when he steals the rum. Your butt, Jobu.
Yeah, and they sell those, you know. Like, you could get a Jobu.
But you're right. If they remade Major League today,
they would not do it. Well, first of all, they couldn't make this movie today.
All the characters are problematic. I mean, in their own way, right?
In their own way. Yeah.
I mean, Jake Taylor just stole somebody's fiance. Yeah. You know? I mean, come on, man. But
Roger Dorn's wife
hooking over Charlie, strike this mother effer out. Yep. You know, that was it. Were you worried for Wild Thing when he came out of the bullpen, Brandon, at the end? What was Q2 going to do to him?
I don't know who she was.
Yes.
I swear to God.
I thought he was going to slug him on, and I thought the climax there was going to be them fighting on the pitcher's mound.
Yeah.
Right at the end there.
I do like in the celebration, he punches him out and then hugs him again at the end. So that's your resolution. So.
Yes.
So I totally buy that Roger Dorn would be cheating on his wife in these road trips.
So. Yeah. So, again, first time viewing, 2022. Looking at the character Dennis Hayward makes me a little unsure right now. But I can appreciate what you guys are saying.
I feel like Major League 2 has some more stereotypes too, don't they?
Major League 2 is worse in that front.
Is it?
I've only seen that twice.
Major League
2
is worse on that front than this one is.
Okay. And not just with him, just with other characters. They introduce more characters who are even more
worse stereotypes.
And it's a worse comedy. If you're going to be offensive, you better be funny, you know? And Major League 2 has not followed through on that. But we'll keep an eye on that, Brandon. So thank you for that.
Okay.
Bring that up for sure.
I liked the movie. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It was a movie that I would never have seen if not for this podcast.
Okay.
So it's been good.
Well, see, you should broaden your horizons, diversify your bonds, so to speak.
I have too much Star Trek to watch.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Well, any final thoughts then?
Final thoughts. Love this movie. Still love this movie. Mm-hmm. When people ask me what my favorite baseball movie is, I'll point this one out. It's been an integral part of my life for a very, very long time. I know it in and out, and I don't see that changing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's somebody I follow on Twitter, Foz Rotten. He loves it too. I think he's his favorite. He gives this one a 5 stars. He loves it as well. Thinks it's one of the funniest movies ever.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I got a question for you guys.
Ooh.
What is the home run count of this movie? How many home runs are hit in baseball games?
Does the wife count?
Heyo. And imaginary home runs don't count either. Yeah. By the way. That was a funny scene. Oh man, you got all that one. Uh-huh. They see him acting like he hit the home run in his imagination. Yep. That was really good.
I would say 10.
Okay, what about you, Lance?
17.
Six.
Oh.
There's not that much baseball. That's how I realized the legend was baseball. I'm like, all right, they're playing baseball. Let me pay close attention. Like, there's not much baseball, not many home runs. So the first one is when Clue Haywood hits the grand slam off Vaughn. And then Clue Haywood hits a home run at Yankee Stadium. And then we see Jake hit one in like kind of the montage. And Serrano hits one in the montage.
I thought there was more in the montage.
No, there's just a couple in the montage.
Okay.
And then the Yankees player hits one. In the final game, and then Serrano hits one in the final game, winning 6.
It's tied at 2 from a 2-run shot by Serrano.
F you, Joe Boo.
Yep, I do this myself.
So, as you can tell, Lance and I love this movie and Quitter quite a bit. But there you go. 6 home runs.
6. Excellent. Right on. Okay. Well, I got a question for you then, Zach.
Whoa, what's that, Brandon?
So, how would you rate this film out of 5? What are we going to give it?
I don't know. I'm the baseball guy, but please go ahead. Come up with a baseball term we can use.
How many pinch hitters would you give instead of 5?
Oh, they could choose pinch. That's the worst possible one.
It's the only baseball term I know. How many stolen bases would you give this?
There we go. I like that. Okay. Stolen bases. That's right.
All right.
American Express. Don't steal home without it.
That was the weirdest scene.
See, but you don't know sports, Brad. Yeah. Like they have local like ads and stuff with athletes, and they're always like that. Especially Roger Dorn, Corbin Burns, and he was clearly reading a script and terrible at it.
It's so good.
You may not recognize us, and we don't get recognized when we use our American Express card. Or a paraphrase.
He slides in. That's so good.
It's so awesome.
I would give this 5 out of 5 stolen bases. This is a hilarious movie, so quotable, it's enjoyable. It's about my favorite sport, baseball. It hits all those beats, all the things Lance's been singing its praises the whole conversation. To me, I like I said, I say it's my favorite baseball movie, and I give it 5 out of 5 stolen bases.
I give it 100 for one for every one of them I'm going to steal this season. I give it 5 as well. No, I give it 5 as well.
Okay, so I'll come in at this. I'm going to give it a 4. So I definitely went up a lot. I enjoyed it, and I think it's fun. So the other question that we got for you guys then, Lance, is this franchise fatigued at this point?
At this point?
Mm-hmm.
See, these are tough because we know what's coming, yeah, but you have to act like you don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
Like if it's 1988 and they're like, we're going to make a Major League 2 or whatever. Are you excited? 1989, yeah.
Yes, I'm excited. So it is not fatigued yet.
Okay. Zach, how about you?
I got to say the same because I really enjoy all these characters, and we didn't see the next, you know, we didn't see the championship series, yeah. We didn't see the World Series, right? We didn't see him win at all, so mm-hmm. There's still potential there, and you could bring in new fun characters at this point,
yep.
And are they going to still, are they still having to fight to keep the team in Cleveland? Like, there's stuff there.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, like you said, Brendan, the lady still owns the team.
Mm-hmm.
She'd still want to do this, and so, yeah, there's definitely, at the end of this first film, I'm like, there's definitely potential for more, and it is not fatigue for me at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely can't wait to see this trilogy wrap up with them winning the semifinals in movie 2 and women winning the World Series in movie 3.
That really would have been the most logical way to do it, Brendan. Someone who does nothing about baseball planned this trilogy out better than they did themselves. But we'll talk about that next time.
Yes, excellent. Right on. Awesome. Lance, thank you so much for joining us to discuss this film. It's great to have you and great to have somebody who loves the film that they're talking about on the program. So why don't you tell the listeners where they can find you when you're not trying to steal bases?
You can find me at Sir Lance Laster on all of my social medias. You can find me on the Nerd Party, part of Training Montage, a sports movie podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, and you can find me on the United Federation of Podcasts talking about all the things that make Arrow Arrow on Always Hold On to Arrow. And you can find us on Twitter at Do Not Fail Our Pod.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and your wonderful Blue's Clues references for your mailbags episodes.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question about your podcast that you do over Nerd Party there. What is your favorite training montage in all of training montage history?
Oh, from Rocky.
Rocky?
Okay. 100%.
Okay.
100% from the Rocky films.
Gonna Fly Now?
Those are the best. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great music, great visuals. I lived in Philadelphia, so I've seen and been to all of those locations. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Right on. Zach, where can people find you when you're not trying to rip off the extra pieces off of that woman?
You know, out of context, that sounds really bad. But
it really does.
Just watch the movie. You'll know what he's talking about. Yeah, you can find me personally at Moron Zach on Twitter. That's MoreOnZach. Also, there's another podcast here on the network, Sasswatch, a Bigfoot multimedia podcast where me and Ken Tripp talk about the movies, documentaries, books, and everything to do with Bigfoot and have a fun, lighthearted look at that. And you can find us on Twitter at SasswatchPod. And then, of course, I'm the host of Always Hold On to Smallville. We talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman show. You can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S.
You know, you guys have, like, very similar sounding podcasts there.
Yeah, it's almost like they were connected and came out of each other somehow.
Yeah.
So.
Exit right on. And as for me, you can find me here on the network with another show called Infinite Diversity, which is all about new Star Trek. And then you can also find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network with a show called Good Evening and Alfred Hitchcock Podcast, where we cover Hitch's films in chronological order. Well, that's all we've got for you this week as we finish our discussion here on Major League. We will be back again next week to discuss Major League 2, or is it 2 Major 2 League?
We're out of here.
We're out of here. Well, we do have to thank a few other people first. We do have to thank our associate producers, our executive producers of the network, Ken Tripp and Tony Robinson. Thank you so much to Tony Robinson for creating the wonderful art and to Zach Tripp for creating our wonderful theme music. I'd like to thank our associate producers, Casey Pettit and David Willett. Thank you so much for supporting the network and our show in particular. Excellent. So, until next time, when we hit another home run with Major League 2.
You're out of here.
Oh my God, the Indians win it!
This has been a production of MTMR Media Works.